Welcome to the most mouth sounds ass podcast on earth. You're listening to another episode of Can You Hear the Words that are coming out of our mouths?
I say mouth, but
mouths.
Yeah, the school of ludicrous.
Yeah. That's why I had this giant oversized fist armor. Right here. Yeah.
Iffy Wadaway is here.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good.
I'm
Cody Ziegler.
My name is Andrew T.
The premise of this well-concocted show is that we watch the Rush Hour movies and then it being a fusion of Asian culture and Black culture.
Yeah, I'm Asian.
I'm Black.
If he's Black.
Yeah.
If I may.
Yeah.
If I may be so presumptuous.
Yeah, for some reason I was going to say Asian and Black just because of the yes and of it all. Yeah. But that's not true.
Yeah, no, if he is Black. Connecting to the old continent.
African.
Yeah, so we got we got two types of Black.
We have every conceivable point of view covered.
Yeah.
The important thing is, we're going to say the absolute right thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a podcast where Zig and I, our friendship is based on being Asian and Black and food.
Yeah.
And so we decide the two most things that are that are the Rush Hour movies.
Yes.
And a fusion food. And again, like I said last episode, if this were a white podcast, we'd either be doing a movie or we'd be talking about food.
Yeah.
But we got to work twice as hard.
Yeah.
So we're doing both.
And that's why this podcast is only 45 minutes long.
Also, it's a fusion of fusion, you know?
Yeah.
The food is fusion. The pot is fusion.
We're fusing it out.
Yeah.
And so today, we have concocted.
Andrew's being very generous. Andrew is concocted.
Zig, a big part of this was Zig's recipe, and you had some writing to do yesterday, and I just executed what you sent to me.
Oh, thank you, Chef.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chef. No, thank you, Chef.
Yeah, thank you.
Where'd you get this recipe, Zig?
I'm so glad you asked. If you're not putting on the spot. So I got this from a previous girlfriend who was Nigerian. So the dish for today is
the single most cancelable dish possible.
It is jollof.
The whole world is going to be mad at us.
It is jollof with brown rice. But then that's like sort of the black version. But Andrew has added shrimp.
We made jollof shrimp fried rice.
Not
fried jollof rice.
Statistically, every human being on earth thinks we did this wrong.
No, I think this is, if this was at one of they have that new highbrow Nigerian restaurant.
Yeah.
And this is the type of fusion they would make. I think we're in an era where we've got the recipes. Now we're putting them together.
I will just say one of the
you know, that's very presidential of you to say.
One of the links Zig sent me just to just get a sense of how to do.
It was just stoic enough to be like, oh, he said nothing, but he did say something all at the same time. Damn, he made a point, but he didn't say anything.
He made a point. What is that point?
Nah.
No one knows.
So the real ones with the open minds receive.
Oh, this is open your mind, your eyes.
Yes.
Even on the recipe that Zig sent me just to like give me a sense of like what the steps were and send some photos for jollof rice, the comment section had every different type of African person saying every other different type of thought and on jollof rice was wrong.
And this is from an acclaimed, well-known African, like Nigerian chef.
Well, here's the thing, is there is currently a war in Africa over who has the best jollof rice.
Yeah,
so you also have that. You have like Ghanaian riffraff trying to like push their weird agenda.
Uh-huh.
And then you have like other, you know, African countries that are not even at the fight is Nigeria versus Ghana, and there's other African countries like, man, neither is good. I'm like, no one's even talking about you, bro. Like, don't even enter the arena.
And if I may make another sacrilegious thing that I did.
Yeah.
Instead of using Caribbean or African curry, I used Japanese curry bouillon cubes in the red stew.
Oh.
So, which is why it's a little less spicy and a little sweeter. And also, I might have just cooked it too long, but all of the scotch bonnet spice is gone pretty much.
I will say this is probably...
It was spicy when I first like blended it.
Yeah.
And it is like gone.
Well, I think at this volume, you probably would use two.
Yeah.
I'd say this volume probably need like at least three or four.
Yeah. And if also, you like heat. I think that adds to the fusion of it, because I think if you went like straight up with a jollof recipe, it's a very like... powerful, spicy dish. It would just taste Nigerian with some shrimp on it.
But this I think, you know, the flavors all kind of come through.
Oh yeah, no, you did really good. The only difference I immediately clocked, because the only thing is like there's like a light mushiness to like traditional jollof.
It's like a paste. Almost like a watery paste.
Yeah,
the red stuff portion of it.
But also. I think it's the brown rice. Brown rice is firmer. So that I was like, oh no, this is, you nailed it.
It's a little more toothsome. And also Zig and I are trying to just like, you know, fiber is just, you know.
Look, I get it. You know,
we're just trying to stay heart healthy.
The amount of protein that I eat, if I don't have fiber, I'm not shitting. It won't happen. You know, I shit a lot.
Yeah,
you know?
People can't see, but if he is the size of a truck.
You know, sometimes I forget that, like,
they're normal sized human beings. Yeah,
or that planet. I'm like buff. And then like I will walk up to people in real life and just watch them be like, oh shit.
Yeah. I feel like you are the best type of person, which is you became buff after your brain formed. So you don't have like buff dickhead mentality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Came later.
Also, it's like why people get buff. I feel like you have a lot of broken men in the gym who are like filling a void
with
creatine. Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so they get buff and they have this like complex. And I oftentimes see them because I'm a power lifter. And it definitely has shift because we're all in industry. I am awaiting the day that I finally have to take that walk into either DC or Marvel Studios to play a superhero of some sort, because I'm built for that.
Iffy, we need someone to eat an alien ass.
Yeah, yeah.
Feige, I'm so glad you called me.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's also Iffy. I'm so glad you're here for us to talk about Rush Hour 2, because this is also Chris Tucker in this is the only person to rival your level of public horniness I've ever seen.
Oh, man.
But I feel like we'll get to it in the actual digestion of the show, but he used it for such evil in his movie. Like, he is like, I told Andrew, like, one of my notes, it just says, oh, Chris Tucker evolved into a sex pest.
Yeah.
In this movie.
Oh, yeah. It is. Well, you know, there are so many moments within this movie that you're like, oh, yeah, this was, in fact, written by a white man. Yeah,
I know.
But. Buffness aside, I try and use my horny for good, for pleasure, you know, mm-hmm. Try and keep, you know, fat life on fat life and keep real life in real life.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. I love, the most ethically horny man I've ever met.
Look, ethically horny, ethically non-monogamous.
If he gets canceled after this, it's not my fault. I had no idea.
It's going to start with this, where it's like, Andrew,
I had no idea.
The signs were there. He kept splitting the jollof rice with his two fingers and licking it from between them.
Oh, speaking of, and then the final portion of this, because there was a curry element to it, the fried rice was actually in the style of a Singapore noodles. So it's like a little more curry forward, mm-hmm. shrimp. I made some fake ass cha sao. Pork belly that Zig saw me in the middle of making. It was like, what the fuck are you doing?
It was a song. I feel like a lot of times, I mean, people don't know that the sort of resume that you have when it comes to throwing dinner parties.
I don't think I. Well, I
mean, you do. You enjoy coursing out menus.
Yeah,
that's true.
And you also enjoy.
I like feeding people
in the best way possible.
Yeah,
having one or two things more extra for you, like work you have to do. It always. I mean, we win because we do no work. But for you, it always. I'm gonna like just throw this into an infusion and then do a reduction and like, you do more work than necessary that we
I
have
like
to do.
Yeah, I like it. Listen, the thing I almost tried to do, but I thought shrimp fried rice would be funnier and I didn't want to pick a whole crab, is do crab fried rice with like starting from a live Dungeness crab.
Oh yeah.
I just didn't have that kind of time.
Look, I need the listeners at home to know that Andrew sits before us wearing
an apron. Yeah.
And it's, yeah. and it's not a fresh, crispy apron. It's a weathered apron. It's no,
my
an apron.
Apron is fucked up. It's yeah. so covered in red stew from
but
yesterday.
That's good. Because it shows that you use it. Because if you see somebody walk out with a crispy apron, it's like, bon appetit. I'm like, nah, bro.
Yeah, my shit is. Nah. My shit is like, also, like, every time I wash it, it like takes forever to dry. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, that's thick ass material.
Yeah.
Anyway,
use a Tide pin instead.
So okay, so we'll get back to a verdict on whether I need like a Tide like Sharpie. There's no pen in this shit. I need like a Tide like the kind of marker you can huff.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get back to whether we think this dish brought Asian and Black people closer or further apart. Yeah. I think the world is going to weigh in and say it is bringing everyone further apart.
No, I think it's going to bring it closer because if you like it, you're like, oh, hell yeah. And if you don't like it, the Ghanaians and Nigerian will stop fighting each other.
That's true. This is unifying. Yes, this is bringing the world together because everyone is mad at me. All Asian people are like, fuck this fried rice.
Yeah, yeah.
That is the wet brown rice and this bullshit ass.
Yeah, oh, yeah. China and Japan wrapped their bandanas together and held them in the air.
All right. Let's get into fucking Rush Hour 2. We'll do this the way we did it last episode because that worked, which is we'll use my sketchy ass notes to try to do a synopsis.
Mm-hmm.
Interrupt me as much as humanly possible.
Yeah, well, I'm going to start off the bat because it started off being like, oh, I told Andrew this when I came in. And if you've heard the first issue or the first episode, you already know this. But like Rush Hour 2 is as racist as I thought Rush Hour 1 was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And as much restraint as they had in the first one to only be a little racist and mostly at the expense of Chris Tucker looking like an idiot.
Yeah.
They start out with this movie. I like that the two in Rush Hour 2 is like a little dragon.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, we're in for a movie, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Pictures are back.
This my big note that I wrote was, is this the first movie that got more, is this the first media that got like less woke as time went on? This is the only thing that has been regressing.
Oh, like, yeah, because I think that, you know, the catchphrases, the schoolyard catchphrases were all the racist things.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's what's good. Like, do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth? I remember we would say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's you know, we were in elementary and high school. Brad Ratner was an adult
white man.
Yeah, yeah. Who should have been like, okay, they're focused on the wrong thing. Let's see if I can educate with this second one.
Yeah. I think, Ratner clearly was like, oh, I knew it. The studio was holding me back.
Yeah. I will say this seemed like there was less restraint from.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like he got less notes on this because the first one, I made a point like the you know, because if he does have a Blu-ray of the trilogy.
Yeah.
I think it may be like Criterion Collector or some shit like that.
Quite nice artwork on it.
Yeah. That was the Amazon like special edition that they came out with, and I was like,
shout out to Amazon.
Yeah, shout out. They need the
physical media. Yeah. I'm going all the way back, baby. I got a GameCube
edition.
Got a fucking GameCube.
You said that like you had the Dead Sea Scroll.
Yeah.
I'm going all the way back.
Yeah.
A GameCube. What? Yeah. If you what?
I got a fucking GameCube now.
How
can you even connect that to something?
You got to use the converter. But then I bought the like multi converter because I have an N64. A known comedian who I proudly said before, won't anymore, but I have their N64, and it has Banjo-Kazooie, Conker's Bad Fur Day, the original Smash Bros.
Do you have Perfect Dark?
No. Mm. You have an N64 too, right?
Yeah, it's somewhere. I have a Dreamcast and N64 that I'm desperately trying to hunt down because I want to play Sonic Adventure 1.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just like I hit the odometer in my age, but I immediately was like, I need all the old consoles.
Truly, like,
you can afford them and you have a place to put them now.
We have a lot of free time because of the strike. Producer Matt, who is not on mic by my decree,
silence, Matthew.
I was texting him like maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I was like, you know that meme of like the cat reading a newspaper, like, I think I want to buy a boat.
Yeah,
it's like, I think I want to buy a DS, and I just fully Went to a store and dropped like $80 in a DS so I could play Advanced Wars Dual Strike.
Yeah. Oh, I've been playing Advanced Wars, but not Dual Strike because I got a.
You know what? I know I said digress as much as you want. I'm gonna get you guys off of video.
Okay, okay, sorry.
I'm so sorry.
We're really at the opening credit.
Here's my notes in order. Opening credits music, much more oriental.
Yeah.
And then we're getting a plot. Zhang Ziyi bombs the fucking American Embassy. The guys are singing Beach Boys in the car. Chris Tucker is horny.
Oh, yes. That's what I wanted to point out. 90s comedies were funny in the sense that they were like, if this bit worked,
we're fucking running that motherfucker.
Yeah. Because this is just a callback to the car bit earlier. And there's like, okay, what if we did it again? But then like, it's white. And so like, they're like, why are they singing it?
Yeah. I wish they all could be California
girls. This was dope.
I love Beach Boy.
You doing? Wait a minute. All day yet time, Moksam. Told my sat yo man. Hey, where you going? Let's get some sushi. Hey, cutie.
I wish they all could.
Hey. That was my CD. Don't you ever touch a Chinese man's CD. Did you see the way those girls drove off? It was laughing at us.
Those girls drove off because of you.
All I did was invite them to have a drink.
You invited them to get naked and sacrifice a small goat.
Which word was goat?
I was trying to, like, keep track. Basically, the first, like, 45 minutes of this movie is only callbacks.
Yeah,
it's, like, no story and no, like, character shit, I don't think.
Yeah. I also, as someone who has not seen this movie since, 2001, wherever it came out, I was like, oh, it's interesting that first one, L.A., second one's going to be all Hong Kong. That's so fucking cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then obviously they go right back to L.A. when like, we've done all the Chinese shit. The first like 5 minutes of this movie, my note literally says, Beach Boys are back! Exclamation point. And then so is Chris Tucker's racism. And then Chris Tucker is now a sex pest. Like, he is so diabolically down there in this movie. And not in like a funny way. The way you're like, oh, this is what they put in like, college racism books about how they depicted black people.
Well, it's a little sad.
It's so funny because there was an element to the massage parlor picking scene that feels like an homage to the Enter the Dragon scene.
Oh, yeah.
But then it just like it gets it's too horny. Yeah. It gets, he's like, yeah, let me get.
It's so long.
Yeah.
Let me get her.
It's like, but then it's also like so PG because then on the B side, they're like doing his nails and like giving him a pedicure. And it's like,
well, but that's the thing, right? That like kind of, because I was like, okay, we're pushing a lot of stereotypes. We push the stereotypes that like all Asian massages end in a happy ending.
Yeah.
But then that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even seem like it could happen in that room.
Yeah.
Because I've only gotten a couple of massages in my life, but like I've never, maybe it's different over there, but the idea of having massage next to 15 other people in an open air room seems the opposite of like relaxing.
Yeah. It really seems like they're like, well, we need Jackie Chan to see Ricky Tan.
Yeah.
So we can't have them be in a normal room. So it has to be in this open area, but we have to pay off Chris picking all the women.
Yeah.
You know, it could have just been like him walking in post nut. I didn't even see like them massaging him. He could have just been like, whoa, my balls are drained.
Damn, that's crazy, Tan. Oh shit, Ricky Tan. I will say, Ricky Tan is a great name for an antagonist in a movie.
Yeah.
Speaking of words coming out of people's mouth, like I could listen to Chris Tucker say Ricky Tan all day.
That part also, this is a thing that like is so funny in Hong Kong in general, which is that like most people, first of all, speak English. They were ruled by the British for as long as anyone who lives there has been alive.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Like, and so most people speak or at least are familiar with English. But that is my favorite thing about like Hong Kong Cantonese. It's just like Cantonese, Ricky Tan, Cantonese. Like they just will just say and that's my favorite part. They like just bring in the English when they need
that's
it.
What I want to say, because you speak a little Cantonese, or you speak Cantonese pretty fluently.
I speak Mandarin way better. My mom grew up in Hong Kong,
because I was wondering how much of the like Cantonese that was being spoken by Chris Tucker and being translated was actually real?
Almost none. There's a few bits where he's like hello. I think there's one part of hello, and then like when he goes into the actual massage parlor, I think he gets his one line of Cantonese.
Yeah,
and then the rest is just like gibberish.
Because there's the one where he's in the karaoke bar and he says all this stuff, and it's like, you said take out your samurai swords
and shave their butts. I'm like,
that part is both so weird, and also that one is so weird because it's so clearly ADR'd, like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
10 years later. Yeah, by, yeah, like, yeah. I don't even think it's Jackie Chan. I think it's someone like in the edit bay doing a Jackie Chan, because it's over his shoulder and it doesn't match anything, and yeah, the voice is wrong.
We gotta know what the original, because you know it had to be some shit that the studio's like, look,
yeah,
we're letting you wild out, yeah, on this, yeah, one, but you're, this is where we have to drop.
Absolutely not.
Also, it's just speaking of this entire scene, I mean this entire first act of the movie, like, it is I had an observation the first one, which you may also have noticed, is that Chris Tucker's suits are like three sizes too large in the first one. And I love that he traded his oversized leather jacket for a traditional oversized Chinese suit.
Yeah, Chris Tucker dresses like a NBA draft process. Yeah. he's standing on that line. It was like, but suits are built for your size, Chris. What's happening?
Right. He's capable of like finding off the rack suits that fit him. He chooses not to. That will be addressed later on. Let's see. Blah blah blah. They go with the Chinese / Jackie Chan just wings it. You can also tell Jackie Chan really does not do improv.
Also, this is always fun to do. To just like be pedantic and really digest the idea of why an LAPD cop needs to be in China to do Chinese street climb. Like, it doesn't feel like a federal level. And then when it became a federal level, because two Americans were killed, like, why didn't they bring in FBI agents? It was just like, y'all are the guys.
I know that there's an answer to it, but as I was watching the movie, because the first one ends with them getting the airplane, I was like, does this sequel just take place after they land in Hong Kong?
It feels like this is supposed to be a direct like
sequel,
10 hours later sequel.
Yeah, I was wondering because there's literally no setup. They're just in traffic listening to Beach Boys.
Yeah.
They don't give any info. Dump, like, man, I'm so crazy coming here for y'all. It was just like, oh, we're here.
That also definitely means that opening scene probably. Chris Tucker says, why is it taking so long? Jackie Chan says, rush hour, and spikes the camera, and they cut that for sure. Like, definitely thought about it.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. The karaoke bit kind of goes nowhere.
Yeah.
But the fight scene. Okay. So that's the other thing. The fight scenes in this are so much better.
Yeah.
There's so much more Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Because both the massage parlor and the karaoke bar, post karaoke bar fight scene, are fucking great.
Yeah. Go ahead. I was gonna say the first one was so Chris Tucker forward, and this one it seems like, well, we've got Jackie Chan, Jackie Chan, I'm sure his profile had risen. So he's like,
and he's willing to do this shit.
And I'm sure they probably called out the small moments of Jackie Chan's martial arts in the previous one. They're like, yeah, no, this was some of the best parts. Yeah. And so it was all right, let's go for it.
The thing that I noticed on my second watch through of this is that there are so many action scenes where Chris Tucker runs just off camera and then a pair of black hands like go in and like either or like the back of a black dude. Like so clearly the double was right where you like just off camera. So funny.
Oh, that's so funny. But it's also so smart in a way that they kept the fluidity of a fight scene to be like, yeah, you jump off, he's going to do it, and you jump back.
You really don't notice it until I was like, wait a minute.
Now that's going to be my new favorite.
It's very hard not to see it once you see that it's happening. Because it really is, there's like just two big ones, and I think a couple others where Jackie Chan's like, flip over there. And he's like, yeah, the flippy. Yeah, yeah. It's so smooth because like Chris Tucker's like off camera for like a microsecond, hands reach down and flip him, and then he's back. Yeah. And it is like definitely not his hands, but they definitely got it. Like, it's imperceptible. It's so fucking good.
But the action scenes are always great in these movies so far. Oh, yeah. To that scene, yeah. the story is just not well. I don't know. I mean, I felt crazy being like, the story's bad in Rush Hour 2, but like.
But it's nuts because when you are old enough to be like, wow, they really made an eating cat or eating dog joke.
Yeah, right? There's a dog. The jokes are really, I mean, I think it was more just like Chris Tucker got to keep more improv in.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, street, like, street jokes about Asian people. And you're like, yeah, all right.
So he looks at this dude's dick and he's like, I can see why you're angry. He's like, because he has a small dick.
Yeah. You know what? Props to him for the restraint of not saying, I see why all of you are so.
That's true.
So like I see why this one individual who does not.
This one.
He's not making up everyone else's population.
But this guy, only in this scene.
I did write down, during the karaoke bar where he's speaking fake Chinese and then Jackie's like translating, I did write, it is really unclear why Jackie Chan goes along with this. It doesn't make any sense to me. Chase Zhang Ziyi up a scaffolding. Oh, it's also funny. Zhang Ziyi is the henchwoman in this.
And she is so fine.
She's
post Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
It has to be post. I'll look it up, but I believe it has to be.
Because it does strike me as like, this person was in a phenomenal film. And now our American version is we're just going to put her as like a henchman that put the bombs in the mouse.
Yeah. Well, it also, though, is like very clear her English is not good at all. The year after they must have started it right after. She must have just gotten cast in it right away.
Yeah, and they're like, we gotta get her or two.
But she's pretty good in it. I mean, she's not asked to do a ton.
Yeah, I mean, but that's just a woman in an action film in 2001, you know, like,
yeah,
so you're gonna get
speaking of it, I am so surprised that they didn't pit her and Jackie Chan up against one another because she has such a well-documented martial arts background.
Yeah.
Do it so well in film.
I would bet he has a clause that's like, I won't punch a woman.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my strong guess. And they even, I mean, not to jump ahead, but they make it super clear that
you can jump ahead is fine.
Chris Tucker doesn't really try to hurt her.
Yeah.
Like it's super like.
It does become like a cartoon for a second when they're in their fight where she's like, he flips and falls and like the pole hits her in the face.
That's very insane. Let's see. So she beats up Jackie with the bamboo pole. He gets rescued by Chris Tucker. They have a nice stunt on the bamboo. Then they go into the massage parlor where, this is the other thing. The follow my lead joke.
Was that called? I completely missed.
Well, because he does follow my lead before what I called last episode of ours the most breathtakingly ignorant scene I've ever seen, where Jackie Chan beats up a bunch of black guys who are mad that he called them the N-word.
Yeah.
But I really thought
he was going to say it, right?
That all comes off of follow my lead.
Yeah.
So I thought when Jackie Chan tells Chris Tucker to follow my lead, some racist thing was going to happen.
he calls all the Chinese guys the N-word too.
I mean, or something. I don't know.
I think this is right around the time I started checking out of the movie because my notes just say, I think I hate this movie. I'm tired, boss. This is a car. Yeah, I don't know. I did not like this whole sequence of this movie.
Iffy.
And I don't like the shit on movies. It doesn't bring me joy, obviously.
Yeah.
You like this movie though, right?
I mean, I like it in the sense that like nostalgia, like it, you know, it's weathered. I took a refreshing pass and I was like,
it really like one held up much better than two. I was surprised about that.
I think because one, just like the actual bones of the writing is so good. It's like, this is a time where like, this is obviously from the school of like, with Lethal Weapon, like the movies hold up, who knows, but like the scripts are very tight for those movies.
Yeah.
And I think you're right about that, where it's like in one, it's a very like simplistic, like we've seen this story before in a new lens. And the only thing that's kind of, you know, weathered is the jokes because they don't hold up with time. And then you make a sequel that's completely based off of those weathered jokes. It's like the shitty version of Ship of Theseus. You're taking the pieces that don't hold up and built a whole movie around it.
But the action is better. let's see. Okay. There's a very weird switcheroo bit where Jackie's office gets bombed.
Yeah.
And they just kind of let him think Chris Tucker's dead for like 15 minutes.
And then we get like another Who's On First. Like yeah. You,
yeah. It's so bizarre. Let's see. We go onto a yacht. They learn about the evil white guy that is probably in charge of this thing. Shockingly, spoiler alert.
Subversion.
Yeah. This time the white guy is innocent. Ish.
Yeah, yeah. Brett Ratner was like, "We gotta."
No more evil white guys.
Yeah, we gotta clear the name of the.
And they meet and objectify Rosalind Sanchez pretty thoroughly.
Yeah, it's it was so.
Slow down, baby, right?
It is so unsettling watching Jackie Chan be horny on man. Like,
because it doesn't like feel like him, and I don't mean this in the weird like you know. Sexualizing Asian men way, but like it doesn't seem like if he was horny, that's how he would do it.
Yeah, that's the thing is he's being horny as an impression of Chris Tucker, basically. Yeah. But it's so weird and like out of his character.
Yeah,
because he's not like that in many of his movies. Like,
yeah,
I've seen movies where like he's had wives and children and stuff, but like he's never like he's not like like he's not flying over to like the pie on the window.
Yeah, yeah, he's so horny. It was some real Pepe Le Pew shit. All of a sudden. And it's like, so weird.
I do love that it has turned into a popular black Twitter meme.
Yeah, that is true. That's every the first thing I was like, oh, this is where this is from. I forgot.
Wait, which one?
Whenever there's someone hot, it's people post that slow down, baby. It's great every time. Yeah. I will say.
Okay, we get some very boring exposition about fucking, you know, Jackie Chan's dad.
They're still carrying that dad torch.
Rosalind Sanchez is or isn't a double agent. It's very unclear. Yeah. It's shocking how little it matters, considering she seems to betray them like five times.
Honestly, this is when I started. This is when I exited out of it from a full screen to like just a small screen. And I opened up Google and opened up like Reddit, and I was on Reddit while I was watching it. So I sort of checked out. But if I may jump forward to like my personal favorite part of the movie.
Oh, yes. This is the next thing I was going to get to.
I love
by far the best part.
Yeah. This is a shout out to Don Cheadle, maybe the first Hotep Japanese weeb I've seen on brought to the silver screen. It's got to be his first like big role. Like, there's no way that he was like doing him a favor by showing up in this he's so committed. Like, he's committed in a way like, oh, this is my big break type of commitment. Like, the job. Like, he's committed. Like, his like choreography for the fighting is like pretty fucking solid. Andrew, you said that his Cantonese.
His choreography is unbelievable. His Cantonese is a billion times better than it needs to be. It's like, you know, he's actually speaking Chinese.
Well, he took lessons.
Yeah. Yeah, he clearly took lessons in a good way.
Where did you land that? Ching Sifu ga hong go ga. Fucking a Ching Sifu? My Crenshaw go go Freddy Ching. Oh,
they're brothers.
Oh, all right. Ding ga nei wei tong 7-Eleven ya cai ga.
7-Eleven?
Ko go hao dom 6 san mong ga.
Oh.
Hey, I heard that. Don't be talking about me, man.
It's one of two. I guess we can call them post cameos now, but like that in the Jeremy Piven, I can't bit at the end. I'm like, who did he know? Is he friends with Brett Ratner? This is such a bizarrely cast. Because it means that like you don't even need that scene. Like there's no reality in which people are wondering like, how did they get these nice suits? It's like Chris Tucker's whole thing. It's like he has clothing. Like it's so weird to take.
Don Cheadle is not credited in this.
Really?
It's just like
was his brain.
Yeah. That's fucking wild.
Shout out Kenny.
Yeah, he's but they also play a bit where so he's a black dude who speaks Cantonese, who can do kung fu and makes fun of Chris Tucker. And in my like not thinking it through career-wise head, I thought, this is awfully late to introduce what would be a very actually good foil to Chris Tucker.
Like
the black guy that actually gets along with Jackie Chan.
Yeah. See, that's the fun version of this.
Yeah. And then they're jealous, and then Chris Tucker ultimately like learns to something.
Yeah. I would watch the movie. I love that. Yeah, sounds
that
like
draft
much,
is so much better.
Yeah. The Don Cheadle draft But yeah, he just disappears. That's by far the best scene. There's a little blah, blah, blah. They get kidnapped. They put a back of a truck. They get taken to Las Vegas for the big set piece. yeah, there is. Okay, so this is where we do a little suit review.
Yeah.
Chris Tucker is wearing a three-piece, I believe four-button snakeskin
5X leather. Yeah, snake suit. Skin yeah.
Suit. And a cowboy hat.
Yes.
Jackie Chan is also wearing kind of a suit, but kind of not really.
Well, he's got to be able to like do kicks and stuff.
Yeah, it's like a little bit like flashier, but it's so weird. It's yeah. What do we? Okay, little suit review. What do we think about the suit?
I mean, it looks like a DLC camo pack for like a Call of Duty character. That's what it's like. Oh, this is Big Tex.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Big Tex is perfect. Yeah. Yeah, you know, Big Tex pack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tracer pack.
It's an insane fit, but also I can only imagine how niggas was dressing in that era.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, that was a fit that he picked out and was like, this, I look so fucking cool. We gonna kill him. Yeah, it looks so fucking cool. And for that, you know, bravo. But yeah, no, right now, by today's standards, trash.
Yeah. He dresses like that. You know that Nathan Fielder bit where he's in like the suit that's like five times
too
big?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's how he looked to me.
It's not even of his insane suits. The fit is less boxy than some of his other suits.
Yeah.
I think to me, it's more just like, this is as good as a human being can look.
Yeah. Also, it is crazy to rock that in the desert.
I know.
Bro was sweating in Vegas.
Yeah.
Ain't no way.
Yeah. Just like the interior humidity alone.
Yeah. Just sucking up all the
cigarette smoke. Right. This was in smoking. Vegas. But this is like
full smoking. Probably like where like there was no non-smoking.
Pre-air purifier Vegas. Okay. So blah, blah, blah. Twist. The big twist. Spoiler alert. In 3, 2, just kidding. Ricky Tan is still alive. Who cares? Did we even say Ricky Tan got shot? He got shot.
Oh, yeah. I forgot Ricky Tan got shot.
Who cares?
You can't keep Ricky Tan down.
I didn't, like, it didn't matter. So it was fake that he got shot.
Also, all this is being, Jackie Chan is continuing the actual part of the movie. And because they need something to cut away to, it's just Chris Tucker doing the You're Racist bit for so long.
So there's such a long bit where, he gets smaller chips at the craps table.
Yeah.
That he's playing. He is. Here's the crazy thing. They're suspicious of him. He gave them $100,000 in fake money. They are correct to be suspicious of him. Also, there's an earlier bit where, this whole thing also revolves around money counterfeiting. And they're like, there's these bills that no one can detect except if you set them on fire. It's actually really easy to detect them. I love that part of the movie. Okay. A big casino fight. Zhang Ziyi fights Chris Tucker with a sword.
Which is bizarre. Yeah. I mean, it's fine. It was a fine. It was like, we know what she can bring to the table. Like, why put her up against this? But maybe Jackie Chan's like, I don't want to punch a lady on screen.
Just my guess. I mean, there's a moment where I thought they were going to do my favorite Marvel thing, where it just so happens that the big battles are always gender segregated.
Yeah.
Like, oh, how'd the evil lady wind up right next to Black Widow? Just lucky,
I guess.
Punch, punch, punch. All right. Well, this is a fair fight.
Now no one's This is a bad.
Fair. No one had to hit a woman.
Is this the one where she's cutting and her clothes are coming off?
No, it must be three.
Yeah,
I'm sure that aged beautifully.
Okay, we're really signing up for some bullshit, huh?
Yeah. Because the first one is such a physically made movie.
It's so much better than I thought it was.
Who knows? Maybe three brings it back home.
Yeah, because I think I've seen three. So
I don't think I've seen three either. And we're also just to let everyone know. These are coming out. Yeah, they won't be all together. Well, no, we won't. Episode 4, because we're doing 4 episodes of this podcast. Get ready for a treat.
Yeah.
Look, if they give you 5, you can replace Zig with a white guy and do Shanghai Nights.
We did. Were there 3 of those or just 2 of those movies?
Shanghai Nights? I think there might be 2.
It's like, we could do a spinoff where season 2 was just 2 episodes.
Let's not pitch additional episodes of this podcast. Yeah. We're barely holding together.
Shanghai Noon. Sorry.
Shanghai,
There's a very, Hong Kong cinema but doesn't make any sense climax moment where like he has a gun on Ricky Tan and Ricky Tan's like talking shit about his dad and Chris Tucker's telling him to kill him and none of it has any meaning at all.
Yeah. I will say Ricky Tan did get a great death. Like one of the top 10, like he kicked that nigga through a window and he falls for 17 stories. He falls. And so they cut to like four different angles of this guy falling and flailing his arms.
So he falls so far. Did you watch to the end of the bloopers?
Oh, that's my favorite blooper.
The, like, the actual funniest blooper is, or the probably, honestly, my actual like laugh out loud moment of this movie is.
It's at the end. It's the famous blooper where it's the reverse shot of Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker looking down. And Chris Tucker's like, he ain't gonna be in Rush Hour 3. Yeah.
So good.
That made me laugh so hard.
So good.
Damn. He ain't gonna be in Rush Hour 3.
Bah, bah, bah. We're in the airport. Jackie Chan gives Chris Tucker his dad's badge,
which is bizarre. I don't
very yeah, unclear yeah, reason.
Yeah, what does that mean to either?
Yeah. Is that in there?
Oh,
earlier?
Here, you throw this away.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I mean, it's okay to not have your dad's baggage without giving away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His fucking police badge.
Maybe it pays off in Rush Hour 3.
Yeah, I hope
maybe.
So. Oh, this is, you know what? I forgot one joke I wanted to get in is on the boat chase where Chris Tucker is threatening Zhang Ziyi. Yeah. He says he's going to give her an LAPD ass whooping, which is inaccurate.
Yeah.
Because an LAPD ass whooping needs five grown and armed men yeah. to beat up one person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It will not be a one-on-one.
It's not one-on-one, yeah.
Not one-on-one yeah, yeah. at all. But that's the movie.
Yeah, this is when I'm like, I'm glad we're only doing four episodes because Rush Hour 1 was such a fun movie to watch. And I'm like, oh boy, I don't know how I'm glad that we only have a couple more going on.
Well, look, y'all can also do the pilot of the Rush Hour TV show.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, we should have done that for the fourth episode.
Oh, we still can.
Yeah, you still can. You know,
Listen, I mean, once the numbers start rolling in, we're going to need to be
stretching out. People start demanding more.
Yeah. So let's not get ahead of ourselves.
I will say, I mean, I told Andrew this as I came in, but watching the bloopers for this one is like, oh, Chris Tucker is just too famous right now. Like, answering the phone call in the middle of a shoot is fucking crazy to me.
Yeah.
Especially when you're shooting on film and like you're literally just burning.
Was it a bit? I couldn't tell if it was a bit.
I don't know.
There's a bit where he answers a cell phone in the middle of a shot.
Yeah. And maybe it's a bit.
But it's true. They're shooting on film, so it's a $2,000 bit.
Yeah.
That can't be.
You want to talk about your tan?
It can't be a bit. Yeah, I guess it can't be a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like too.
It also feels like stand up of that era energy where they're like bulletproof. You know?
Yeah, I don't have to be here. Right. Yeah. He probably, I mean, this was from the era where you made money being in movies like this.
Yeah.
But he probably was making less money.
Is he a stand-up guy? Do you know if he?
Oh, yeah. Chris Tucker. Yeah. His first, he had a really famous bit in Comic View, I think. I used to watch it on repeat. And he, because like all that stuff about like him always doing Michael Jackson bits, he's obsessed with Michael Jackson.
That makes so much sense. Because I'm like watching that first one, I think one of us commented like, this is something that he pitched. He brought to the...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He is obsessed with Michael Jackson.
I have in my notes more MJ bits.
This man is like genuinely obsessed with Michael Jackson. His big famous bit was him imagining Michael Jackson as a pimp. And he does a whole act out.
See, that's classic. That's like early 90s comedy where the bit could just be what if that thing was a thing.
Yeah. That is the most like fucking Comic View.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Come here, girl.
Yeah.
Come here, girl. I said, come here. Yes, I remember that bit.
We're in the end game of this podcast now. Iffy, we have 5.5 questions.
Okay.
For all of us. And I think just because we're going to run out of... No, well, we can come up with... Okay. Out of five snakeskin suits, how do you rate the action of this of Rush Hour 2?
I'm gonna say 5 out of 5 snakeskin suits.
Yeah, I think I might be right up there.
Yeah, I think action for this one because it's more Jackie Chan.
There's more of it.
I'd say a solid 4.
Yeah,
4 out of 5.
I'm gonna give it 4.5 snakeskin. I'm gonna do 4 snakeskin suits and 1 snakeskin vest.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Worth of action for me. It's like we've seen better Jackie Chan on Earth.
Yeah.
But this is so good for like an American
for
movie.
For studio buddy cop movie.
Yeah. It's as good as it's going to get. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Out of how many fake Chinese statues? Out of 5 Chinese fake Chinese statues, how do we rate the comedy?
I'm gonna give it 2.
I mean, I there are some things I laughed at.
Oh yeah,
some
stuff that I definitely laughed at. There's some stuff that I laughed at, and I was like, well, I shouldn't be laughing at.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a solid step down for me too. Chris Tucker's still very, very charismatic and charming, but he is so cartoonishly racist in this movie, and the sex pest stuff.
Stuff is like. Well, it's just so long, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that massage picking scene is wild how long that is. Like, it's also like, all right, let him shoot it, but cut it down somewhere, guys. Yeah. Like, the joke is done. I'm going to give it 1 statue and 1 chopped off head from a statue.
Got it.
It's not that it's like, I'm going to say a thing that is uncharacteristic for me. It's not so much the racism and the sexism as much as it's pretty lazy, comedy-wise.
It's
like, guys, come on. Morbid. Okay. And then I guess this is out of how many slow down babies do we rate the cringe factor?
Slow down, baby.
5.
Slow down, baby.
7 out of 10. Down. Out of 5, 10. It's
slow
just
down.
So
you're losing steam on this.
Well, it was so off putting.
Yeah,
I didn't know it was gonna be that off putting.
Yeah, it's not even horrible. It's just like,
It's just like lazy and off-putting, and you're like,
I mean, it is horrible.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah, but it's like the way like the lady cop, the Secret Service agent, like her whole arc just being like hot Latina lady.
Yeah,
it was bad. It was rough.
Yeah,
rough to sit through.
Yeah. 5 out of 5.
Yeah. What are we, out of?
Oh, babies.
Oh, babies out of 5. Slow down, babies. 7 O's in that slow down.
Yeah. For the culture for us, them giving us reaction, I'm going to do 4.5.
I'm going to take it down. I'm going to put 4 slow down babies and 1 slow.
All right. And do we think, so whatever the movie, do we think the movie helped or hurt Black and Asian people coming together? I weirdly think it helped. I just think like, you know, by and large, like people are ignorant and they just like to have the fun of it. And I think they found fun in this.
I will say.
So in a bad way, I guess what I mean is I think it brought like the worst Asian and Black people closer together.
It's like Alien versus Predator. Whoever wins, we lose. So, yes, it did wonders for Black Asian relations. But not if you're a woman that is Black or Asian.
I will say that Emily said her dad, she remembers her dad loving this. And
really?
Her dad is Japanese.
Yeah.
And he also, you know, he's no longer with us, but he was Republican.
Yeah.
So that'll let you know.
For that type of Asian person, this confirms a lot of things. Not in a good way. Not in a good way. Okay. And now on to the food. Do we think, once again, may I remind you, shrimp fried jollof rice is probably the best way to phrase it.
5 out of 5, baby. 5 out of 5 forks. 5 out of, you know, I'm taking it straight to Doughboys. Mitch.
I think this is actually a great fusion dish. I'm not Nigerian or African. Yeah. I've been known to dabble. If he's a good friend of mine, I tolerate him. So
he dabbles with me a lot.
Yeah,
we be dabbling.
I, you know where you be dabbling? You know where you go be dabbling? That's my idea of Chris Rock.
White people be dabbling like this.
White people be dabbling like this.
We dabble.
Dr. Jam be dabbling.
Yeah. I feel like if it's anything like
you ever get to dabbling, but the dabbling ain't dabbling right?
Yeah, y'all know about dabbling. Let me tell y'all about dabbling.
It's not the dabble you want to dabble, it's the dabble want to dabble.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, but dabble do if you know what I'm talking about.
If it's anything like Asian culture, tolerating the American-born kids of immigrants is actually very the opposite of being old country.
Yeah, yeah.
So just throw that out there.
I will say I heavily fuck with dish so much so that I will be humbly asking for a to-go bag.
Oh yeah. Make sure. I'm gonna bring some back to him. Yeah, so you know,
we're putting Tupperwares out for everyone. Yeah,
get the tuppers.
Yeah.
Tup it up.
And then once again, the most ill-advised bullet point on our document that we made putting together this episode, because it was funny to put it in the document, doesn't make any sense as a final closing question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of our mouths?
Yeah, I do understand. And I would argue
thank you, Iffy,
that Chris Tucker understood in every movie.
Yeah.
Like he was just being a jackass.
Iffy, first of all, thank you so much for dabbling with me and letting me dabble with you.
Of course.
Thanks for coming to the show. If people want to hunt you down, where could they find you?
If people want to fight you.
Yeah, if you want to fight me.
If you want to get some like lifting tips, where can
they? If you want to fight me, you can close.
Also, this is not a bit. If he dropped his workout routine in the group chat a week ago and I got tired, I had to put my phone down. It was so intense.
You know, if you can find me at Iffy Whitey Way on Twitter and Instagram, and Iffy Comedy on Blue Sky, if that even exists by the time y'all are listening to this, you can listen to our relationship podcast with Emmy and Iffy. I'm sure that'll be out by the time y'all are listening.
Hell yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah.
This will give you some motivation.
Yeah.
Now you got it. Now you have it.
Yeah, once you see a tight ship ran like this, you promoted it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Em, I got notes.
Yeah, yeah. I got notes. And Andrew and Zig, they over there, they running their shit tight.
Oh, boy. I can't believe any of this came together.
A big bowl of, multiple bowls of carbs before we started recording.
I'm still eating now.
Yeah, yeah.
This came together pretty well. I was
trying to keep the clinks down.
Yeah.
I didn't. I was just chomping. Sorry, whoever's listening to this. All right. We're not.
Yeah, we don't do plugs.
We don't do plugs. Yeah. It's just that there's no way you're listening to this.
Yeah. How did we end it last time?
I don't remember. Did you do an Owen Wilson?
I'll do my Owen Wilson every time. You didn't tell me piss pants Ben Bars.
All right, that's it. Peace. Do You Understand the Words Coming Out of Our Mouths is produced by Andrew T.
Cody Ziegler.
And Earwolf. Our producer
is Matt Apodaca.
He's right here.
And our engineer is Alex Gonzalez.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you made it all the way to the end, you're a beautiful person. If you're not hearing this voice, go to hell. Earwolf Presents is produced by Earwolf, Amelia Chapelo, and Cody Fisher. And of course, podcast daddy Colin Anderson himself. The Earwolf Presents series is hosted by the one and only myself, Jacques Neal. And our theme music was engineered and sung by the amazing Jordan Duffy. Special thanks and shout outs to Jeff Gross and Aaron Nestor. And for more information on Earwolf Presents, visit earwolf.com and follow us at Earwolf on all social platforms.